House State Affairs Committee to order. Today's Monday, February 11th. It's 8:34. The Representative Millers, Grunberg, Moyer, Bruckman, and Covina present. Today we'll be hearing House Bill 73 relating to appropriation for salmon for Operation Desert Storm. House Bill 40 relating to false information election pamphlet. H.R. 14 relating to emergency firefighters' income tax. First bill we'll take up this morning will be House Bill 40 relating to false information on election pamphlets. Bill by Representative Bruckman is an act relating to providing a false information in election pamphlet. Notice on the bill, the only thing really of change is the things that are underlined, which are added, and then brackets that are taken away. So much of this is obviously existing law. The main part of it is the new number 4 added onto the second page. My intention is to attempt to move this bill out today. Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chairman Covina and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity. I've submitted this bill with the added sentence at the end of existing legislation because people during the election process wait for the election pamphlet to come from the state to compare their candidates, and there's an assumption that what they read in there is accurate and in a sense endorsed by the state, so in fact that's untrue. Until you're a candidate, you don't realize you're paying your $30 or $50, whatever it is, and hand over a form that you yourself did, and then they simply print it up. So I feel that the voters out there think that this is official information, accurate and true, and I think it's unfair to have that burden placed on the state when in fact it's not their responsibility to check it out. This would strengthen the law, and it would be my intent that the candidates are accountable for the information they provide and should be by rights. Somebody from the Department of Law is supposed to be here and to speak to you. And Marjorie? Okay. Well, thank you. And you'll see that Alaska Public Office Commission sent back a letter saying that in fact they had no comment. So with your permission, I would like.
Thank you, Representative Bruckman.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Hi, I'm Margie Odlin from the Department of Law. As far as the addition of the language in the bill, it's pretty straightforward that if someone submits false information in the election pamphlet, this calls for a Class A misdemeanor, which is up to a $5,000 fine or 1 year imprisonment or both. The only thing I guess we want to speak to on this is the constitutionality of dealing with things on prior restraint. I mean, if someone has this put in the election pamphlet, there isn't any provision in law right now to allow any kind of court action prior to, you know, the campaign and the election itself. In fact, the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled that that's prior restraint on beliefs and whatnot. So the thing is that this makes more clear that you can't lie in that, and that is not protected speech if it's actual malice type of lying. It has to meet a certain kind of standard of lying. You have to know it's a lie, and it has to fall into a certain category. So the remedy isn't ever going to come until after everything is over anyway, because there's no way to bring a court case prior to the election date itself. So I just wanted to make that clear. And that's the same for any of these kind of misconduct type things.
In other words, you couldn't do anything about it once they submitted it until after the election already happened?
It probably would not be taken up by a court because that's prior restraint of speech. Unless another campaign brought forward that, but the state is not going to be the one who's going to say, we think you lied. We're not truth cops out there. That's not
okay,
what we would be doing.
Could we take the case that probably this was put in because of someone who falsified their resume? Mm-hmm. It got brought out by public or private individuals, or the Democratic Party brought that out. At that point, then, are you saying that the state still could not charge that person?
Probably not, not according to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's prior restraint.
They've already submitted
that. Well, that's where you use the political arena to deal with that. And that's one of the things that's talked about a lot in the U.S. Supreme Court cases. The cases that have been brought prior to an election have been thrown out because of that.
So if they, if after the election, they could, and it came out afterwards, their election could be thrown out because of it?
On a class A misdemeanor, probably not, but there's recall.
But they could be, after the election, convicted and put in jail.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine.
Minnie? Representative Gruber.
Thank you, Ms. Hoffman. I have a couple of questions. Isn't this right now the crime of false swearing?
Pardon?
I say, isn't knowingly putting in false information on your biographical or your biographical information, isn't that now false swearing?
If the form requires you to swear to it.
Do you know whether it does?
No, I'm sorry, I do not.
Would you please check? I think it's. I think this is right now a crime. I think it's false swearing. And false swearing is a Class A misdemeanor, too, isn't it?
I believe so.
So I think it's already covered under the law. I'd like you to check on that.
Okay.
I think this is a type of false swearing.
Representative Bruckman.
I regret I didn't bring my notes either. I believe that you're right, Representative Goldberg, but that there was no recourse. And it was unclear because it indicated it was a gray area. It indicated more that one candidate would do harm, would knowingly harm by false swearing another candidate. The language could be for yourself too, but it was written in a gray way. And the legislature could overturn the election. The legislature as a whole could overturn the election of a candidate that did that.
I guess the question you're raising is, do they swear and attest that the information they're giving the election pamphlet or the election pamphlet is true?
That's correct. I think you have to. I think there's a certification at the bottom that okay, it's called unsworn falsification. It's AS 11. .56.210, a person commits the crime of unsworn falsification if with the intent to mislead a public servant in the performance of a duty, the person submits a false written or recorded statement, which the person doesn't believe to be true in an application for a benefit or on a form bearing notice authorized by law, or a false statement made in it are punishable. I don't think this is with the intent to mislead a public servant in the performance of a duty. So I don't think it would come under that. So I guess that answers. I would think you might want to check on that. But
yeah, I looked at the statute as to the material to be filed by a candidate, and it does not require it to be sworn. And in fact, I'm almost certain that it's not. We receive faxed information the very last day many times from candidates just trying to get something in under the deadline. So I would doubt very much that it has to be sworn to.
No, but that's unsworn. But it has to be with the intent to mislead a public servant in
yeah.
the performance.
And when you're dealing in the political arena, of course, there's broader protection afforded by the courts too, because of the actual context of it being in the political arena. So.
Second, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gruber.
This seems to cover more than the candidate himself. It says a person commits the crime if they submit or cause to be submitted factual information that the person knows is false. So if you have your campaign manager or your spouse go down and put it in the mail, they're also responsible. I'd ask the sponsor, was that the intent? Or was you just trying to get at the candidate?
I think it makes sense, with your permission, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bruckman.
That anybody in the campaign closely tied to the campaign that would purposely submit false information should be included.
And then, Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Representative Gruber.
It says that the person knows is false. And I remember another race in Anchorage where the person justify things and would claim they didn't know it to be false. And I'm a little bit concerned. I can see holding a non-candidate to the standard of knowledge, but I can see holding a candidate to a higher standard of recklessness, or even criminal negligence. Because the candidate is always going to come up with some kind of an excuse, like, gee, I thought I was an electrical engineer because I enrolled in the course, you know? And then the question is whether you know that to be false or not. And if you want to, in the criminal area, and then we're going to get into non-criminal, but this is strictly a criminal statute that you have here. You can't get an injunction or anything based upon this. And I'm wondering if there should be a higher standard for a candidate who, with reckless disregard for the truth, submits this information, or with criminal negligence. And I'm wondering if, Ms. Unland, your research has revealed to you anything on that issue, whether it should be not actual knowledge or criminal or recklessness or criminal negligence.
Well, actual knowledge is a standard right now that it has to meet. Actual malice, the New York Times standard, Supreme Court.
Is that that's the standard for libel, though? Is that
no,
the standard?
That is also the standard that was used in a case where someone submitted false information about themselves in a campaign, that it had to be actual malice and reckless disregard. So it falls under the same standard of speech.
And that was that a criminal prosecution?
This was for injunctive relief. And yes, it did. It did make it a misdemeanor under New York's code, fair campaign code.
May I ask what case that was?
This is Finasco versus Schwartz, 401 Federal Sup 87.
Maybe before this gets to the Judiciary Committee, you could get copies of that.
Certainly. And it was upheld.
I'm sorry, it was the statute was upheld?
No, the case was upheld, which overruled the statute as being overbroad and didn't set the standard of actual malice for misrepresentation, that it had to meet that standard.
But isn't true that actual malice says, under the New York Times standard, anyway, I'm not familiar with that case, says actually knowing it's false or with reckless disregard as to the truth or consequences.
Mm-hmm.
So that would, if that's the standard that's used, then that would affirm the standard of recklessness.
Right, but they were saying that the statute just saying that misrepresentation alone did not uphold that standard.
So it would uphold a standard based upon recklessness, though.
Mm-hmm.
So recklessness would meet the constitutional standard if they're using New York Times, right?
Right.
Okay, so the answer is it would be constitutional if it was reckless.
Right.
So that's my question, is whether it should be a standard of, and recklessness is defined in the criminal code, isn't it? I don't know if you want to get into this stuff here in this committee, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's important if you're dealing with a...
yes, it is defined. Tonight.
Yeah, okay, here it is. Recklessly, if I may, Mr. Chairman, is defined in AS 11.81.900A3. A person acts recklessly with respect to a result or to a circumstance described by a provision of law defining an offense when the person is aware of and consciously disregards a substantial and unjustifiable risk that the result will occur, or that the circumstance exists. The risk must be of such a nature and degree that the disregard of it constitutes a gross deviation from the standard of conduct that a reasonable person would observe in the situation. A person who's unaware of a risk of which the person would have been aware had that person not been intoxicated at that time, acts recklessly. My thought would be that a candidate should be held to the standard of recklessness. Another person you might want to hold to the standard of knowing. I have some other questions too. If you want to do with that or go ahead.
Well, I guess my question is: is there, with that argument there of recklessness, is there? Are you? I don't know what you want to do with this bill.
Oh, well, that's an issue for the committee. And another question would be. Is there a provision in law allowing the state to reject an election statement that is proven to be false? Can you, could you reject that? Would that be, I don't know whether there's a statute, but would such a statute that would allow you not to print that statement be constitutional if it was proven to be false?
I would have to do some more research on it. I'm afraid that might come under the problems I mentioned on prior restraint. And other states that have attempted to prosecute someone before the election itself and not let the process, politics, take care of it. Research I had a chance to do just this weekend shows that we could not uphold such a statute, but I'll check on that again.
Because it seems to me that one of the main things that could be done with this would be to allow if a candidate or somebody else had proof that the statement was false, to bring in an administrative action in the Division of Elections, asking the division not to print that false statement. That would be a way of dealing with the problem and having an extra
Normally, you're not going to know, though, until it is printed. I mean, because everybody's not going to have the ability of those statements. So, Representative Bruckman.
Perhaps a statement or swear at the bottom of the form saying that you are, to the best of your knowledge, swearing this to be true. Because that isn't in it.
If you do that, if you have a sworn statement, then I think it comes under perjury, doesn't it?
But not notarized. I mean, there's a difference probably between notarized and unnotarized.
Well, that's what you do when you swear. But what you, okay, Mr. Chairman, perjury, a person commits the crime of perjury if the person makes a false sworn statement, which the person doesn't believe to be true. And it'd be certainly very easy to have a notarization form at the bottom, you're subscribed and sworn to. And then you'd have to have it notarized. That's a Class B felony. And a Class... Do you know what the penalty for Class B is?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. I just looked up Class A because that's what we were dealing with today. It's AS 1255-035 would be one. And 1255-135.
035 is five.
Is the fine that involved...
135?
Uh-huh. 035 and 135. One is the fine and one is the...
No, that's the misdemeanor.
Class B misdemeanor, correct?
Yeah. Okay, felony.
Class B felony.
A Class B felony for perjury is up to 10 years. That's pretty stiff.
Mr. Chairman, my
friend. How far do you want to go for a lying politician, huh?
My intent wasn't to close the doors of the jail, to toss somebody in jail. For 10 years. I do have some research here, background on other states, false sanity information. What my intent, with your permission, Mr. Chair, was to make it clear to candidates that this is serious. We just don't get up there in the public and repeat many times and send out 20,000 brochures, things that are really untrue. Minor mistakes certainly can be made by all of us.
Of course, this doesn't address brochures. It's only addressing the official election pamphlet. Is that correct?
That's true. That's true.
The amendment today, if I may, does that. However, the rest of the statute, I believe, is intended to cover the other material. I believe if you look at the other parts of the statute, a letter, a circular, a bill containing factual information relating to a candidate for an election, things that are false, other parts of the bill deal with other materials.
I think it would be difficult to control other campaign materials too, other than there is.
So, in essence, in the case that we're, I assume we're all kind of thinking of when we're dealing with this, probably a crime was committed if that was also in that person's brochures. So really that person, are you saying that person could have been charged?
Under the present law?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Groomberg?
Maybe I didn't understand the question.
Well, what she's saying is that this main part of the bill that's already in existing law says it's already a misconduct of the first degree if they print something in their campaign material that is they knowingly not true.
Mr. Chairman, that's not the way I read it. If you take a look, it would be subsection C. Knowingly, and that's the standard of knowingly, and you may have a constitutional question about that, if it's simply a standard of knowingly, on page 1, line 14, writes or prints or circulates any of these things containing false factual information related to a candidate for an election. The question would be which you know is false, and so it has to do all three of these: containing false factual information which you know to be false, and it's not dealing with a breach of the peace, it's not dealing with the damaging of the candidate's reputation for honesty, and it's not. And I think that this third thing is what you're talking about. That it would be damages the candidate's qualifications to serve to office. The operative language is damages. And here we're not talking about something that damages that candidate's, the candidate's qualifications. We're talking about something that enhances the candidate's qualifications. So I don't think that sub C does this. Now, if they said that my opponent is an axe murderer, and it turns out that they only shot the person that killed with an axe, that would be something that falls under here. But if they said, I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it turns out that they're not, or, you know, I was an electrical engineer, and it turns out they're only a mechanical engineer, I don't think that would cover it. And that also, by the way, uses the standard of knowingly. You may have a constitutional question on that.
I think that's been a concern with this section over the years anyway. It's never been challenged here, but similar ones have been challenged in other states and not been upheld because they aren't written narrow enough to cover speech that is unprotected. It covers protected speech as well. So.
Of course, this number 4 would certainly be narrow enough because we're addressing a very specific instance.
But Mr. Chairman, it would not cover somebody who says, I'm an electrical engineer, in all of their ads. The only thing it would cover is if they did it in the election pamphlet.
Correct.
It seems to me if we're going to deal with this thing, and my thought is if we're going to deal with this, we should, number one, if there's a constitutional problem with the use of the word knowingly on line 14, we should deal with that. Number two, if we're talking about damages, we should talk about enhances the reputation. Number three, we should talk about if it's in the election pamphlet, it should be the same standard elsewhere. We just put election pamphlet up here in line 1 or something like that. It should be. I don't think there should be a different standard for the election pamphlet as opposed to the thing you give out when you go door to door. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Sam Miller.
I'll direct a question to the chair, to Reverend Greenberg. What about on line 5 there, after B, if we change that to and or?
You couldn't, because if you said or, I'm not sure exactly how the drafting should be, Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, but I think that we should have our legal drafters and the Attorney General look at this whole thing. We may be really talking about rewriting this subsection here, so it's constitutional, and so it does what the sponsor wants it to do. And my other view is, it seems to me, that the standard should help, the candidate should be held to a higher standard than a campaign worker. Particularly if you're talking about just somebody who puts it in the mail, that's causing it to be submitted. Mm-hmm. You could have your office delivery messenger prosecuted, technically, which is what you want.
Representative Reckman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm pleased that Representative Greenberg is here. I expected some lengthy discussion, but didn't know where it was going to lead. I wish I were more knowledgeable about the law, you know, what false swear, what compares between false swearing and all the different things like that. Anyways, I would leave it up to the committee to decide. Again, my intent was simpler than has come out in the committee. Mostly it was protect the state, again, because of the assumption that this was official information, but it's not. I believe it would be very impractical for the state. The state simply doesn't have the time, in my opinion, to check all the resumes or all the questionnaires as they're submitted. So again, it would probably be after the fact where the truth were discovered, perhaps before the election, but waiting until the pamphlet was sent out. My question to you is that it's true, isn't it?
Under the law that I've read so far, yes.
Because I think he's just said he's going to skip faxes on the very last day.
Yeah, and whether the state would be a truth cop, I don't know if that would ever be the case. I don't know how we would ever know unless it was brought forward and by someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not certain as to the state's responsibility, or if it's a matter of if it's private between one individual or one candidate versus another.
Yeah, I'll work with that.
Representative Gruenberg.
Just another technical question. The title of this seems to relate to any election pamphlet, in an election pamphlet. But line 10 seems to limit, at least the way the bill's presently drafted, to the official election pamphlet. And that's a crucial difference, because you could have your circular in a pamphlet form. My suggestion, Mr. Chairman, is that we have the legal counsel and Ms. Arnold, and I'll be happy if you want to have some of the committee deal with this too. To deal with some of these. So I am very concerned. The thing that concerns me the most is the thing that you brought up, it's whether our present statute is unconstitutional. And I think that my own thought is probably this whole thing should be rewritten in some manner to cure the constitutional problem and bring everything in line and to deal with some of the other issues.
Yep. Through the chair, that would be certainly reasonable
You didn't ask for these other small changes, changing which to that and whatnot, I assume. Is that something?
That's correct.
You didn't ask for
I did not.
Is that something that they normally do if they're reading it? They want to, while they're changing a law, they go, this is something they standard?
Mr. Chairman, yeah. They do gender neutral on lines 12 and 13, and the drafting manual, they try to make things conform. They use that rather than which. And maybe he wants that at their computer just automatically.
Okay. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Is there anybody else that has anything on this bill?
That wouldn't be constitutional. That's what you said. It's too low a yes. Oh, maybe we have.
Can we have you back just one more minute?
That's a good point, Tom. The question is whether on lines 5 and 8, knowing is too low a standard also for constitutional purposes. And obviously we have to do some more research with this. Do you know who the attorney was in our bill draft?
It was Ford.
Yeah, okay, you should talk to Mike Ford.
Short guy there. Oh,
sorry.
Oh, okay.
That's a good one. I think we need to make sure that the statute itself is constitutional.
Okay, we will be keeping this bill, maybe, for the time being. We will send House Bill 40 into subcommittee. Representative Gruenberg, if you would chair that subcommittee with Representative Bruckman, and have this back for us at your earliest convenience.
I'll ask Michael Plunkett to schedule it, if he will, a meeting for tomorrow for this, so we'll be able to deal with this tomorrow.
That would be great, and I do have a lot of background material.
Yeah, we have to actually do that tomorrow.
The next bill, The next item before us is HJR 14, sponsored by Representative Lincoln. HJR 14 is a resolution encouraging the Secretary of the Interior to establish a policy to deduct federal withholding taxes from wages paid to emergency firefighters. My intent, again, is to attempt to move this bill on. We are, though, the only committee of referral, so I do believe that we should all understand this bill because it will not be going to another committee, such as most bills. Representative Lincoln is prime sponsor. Representative Lincoln.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and I do appreciate the committee hearing this soon. I wish that there were a word that were stronger than urging the Secretary of Interior, because in my travels throughout all of our villages, that over many, many years, the one concern that is raised is this problem with the firefighting checks where no federal tax is withheld. And what happens is that, unfortunately, and I don't think it's any different across the rest of the state or the United States, when you get a paycheck and it says $500 or $1,000 and you have your family to feed and clothe, that you don't think, well, gee, I better save 100 of this for Uncle Sam or 200 of this for Uncle Sam. And consequently, when April rolls around, the individual is faced with not only a bill, but oftentimes when they cannot afford to pay it, which is in most of the cases, they then have the penalty and interest piled on top of that. And in fact, we will be submitting a couple other letters to you where a village has stated that not only in cases where individuals put aside money to pay for that income tax in the springtime, but then faced with no income during the winter months, that savings looks then very inviting, and oftentimes that savings that is put aside is used to feed the family. And the firefighters feel that if it were taken out at the time that it was earned, that it would not put a hardship on not only them, but their families as well. And I really would urge this committee to pass this along so that we can have some resolution by next summer, so that we can see that these the income tax is taken out. If there's any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Do you know why they don't do it now? Is it purely just easier for them because they just write a check and they don't have to figure out the taxes and hold it, whatnot?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the reasoning is. I don't know if my staff, Sandra Borbert, if you got any reason.
They just said that it was much easier to be able to issue the check flat out. It was too time-consuming.
That's what we have heard all along, that it is too time-consuming to figure out the taxes and all, and so that they have historically done this. I might, and I think you already received it, but it's very alarming when you look at the figure that almost $6 million was paid to the firefighters that no taxes were withheld, so you can imagine what that figure looks like to the individual tax holder then come April.
Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, are checks written on the spot?
No, that after the, their fire season, or not season, but for that particular fire project is completed, then they receive a check after that, and it's mailed to their village.
Okay, do you know from where? I mean, does it come down here? Did you know that? Who issues the check?
BLM issues the check.
Okay, so it's not on location. It's from
Yes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I would think it would be simple for BLM to do the taxes. I used to do taxes. And I as a person who hasn't had taxes withheld, I understand the hardship of saving and paying Uncle Sam in April. So I would see the concerns of this bill.
Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seemed to me that the IRS would be happy with it. If BLM were to withhold taxes, probably would be a lot easier for them to go after delinquent taxpayers. And considering on line 14, he has Interior to record
request an exemption from IRS, perhaps we ought to amend this to include a copy sent to the Commissioner of IRS, as well as the Secretary of the Interior.
That's a good idea.
Well, then they'll have the Director of IRS. I think the Commissioner.
It'd probably be after the Secretary.
Yes. Yes.
So it'd be up on top.
Page 2, line 1, at the Interior.
Yeah.
Would there be a state IRS person?
Well, it's only the federals that we're really concerned with. The state is already dealing with it.
There's no state income tax.
No, but the state, when the state writes a check, they deduct the federal income tax. Isn't it interesting that they require all of us to do it, but when it's to their advantage, they say, well, we don't have to.
That's right.
I wholeheartedly support this bill myself. Is there any other changes?
I'm trying to make actually move that amendment.
Is there any objection to the amendment? Any other comments from the committee? Okay, we'll direct that change to be made and accept the motion.
Let me just ask a question.
Representative Grunberg.
Is there a difference between emergency firefighters and other firefighters? But specifically, I know there are people who are employed for summertime. But then I thought that sometimes, for emergency purposes, they get additional people in. I'm not sure about that.
I believe that the way it works is that if a fire should break out, then they call around to the villages and ask for emergency firefighters. So it's usually right on the spot, where the normal firefighters are those that are seasonal, that are year-round or for that season, and know that they're going to be hired for that season, where the emergency firefighters are for a particular fire.
Do they, Mr. Chairman, do they presently withhold for the seasonal firefighters? Or is this just a problem for the people that they...
I believe it is. I can't speak to that factually, but I believe it is for the emergency firefighters.
So the reason I'm asking is because my legislative assistant, Mark Hanley, is every year a seasonal firefighter for the BLM, and we tried to get a hold of him. He's not here. But the problem, the specific problem, is
for
these
the
people,
emergency
just the emergency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And in other words, it appears to me, from what I read through the material, is that people that they're hiring on just a temporary basis is the problem. It's not the ones that are hired as seasonal employees or full-time employees. Representative Miller.
Mr. Chairman, if you're looking for a motion, I would move House Joint Resolution 14 as amended to House Committee with a recommendation.
Any objections? So
I appreciate very much your expediency on this, and I'm sure the firefighters will be very pleased as well. Thank you.
Very happy to accommodate. Bill on the agenda is House Bill 73, Appropriation. An act making special appropriation to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for the purpose of canned Alaskan pink salmon for support of Operation Desert Storm and providing for effective date. I'm the prime sponsor of this bill, basically would provide a sum of $5 million to the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs to buy Alaskan pink salmon. We amended the bill in the last committee to include the statement, caught and processed by Alaskans with appropriate taxes paid. I actually would, I want to read exactly all my statement. I assume you've all read your packet and see the justification. basically it's because I felt the state of Alaska should do something of a somewhat of a substantial basis, a monetary basis, that would do support the troops in the Persian Gulf. But I also realized that we had a huge glut of salmon on the market. But killing two birds with one stone, this bill would spend probably about 1% of the money that we have because of the situation in the Persian Gulf, and we would not have had that situation not occurred. You'll see by the backup material there's a long history of Alaska providing salmon for the military since our botulism scare a number of years back. That has not been the case. And one of the things we're trying to do is reestablish that. I realize that some people would say, well, there's a lot of ways you can spend $5 million. I don't really want to argue that point. I agree. I would like to amend the bill again to include a statement that says that no more than $1.75 million will go to any one processor. The point being that we spread it around to more than one processor in the state. There has been a lot of people call on this bill. It actually has got around the nation. It's been on game shows. Now it's been interviewed in Illinois and San Diego radio stations. And I think the real question is not really the bill itself, but if this is appropriate place to spend $5 million. And I would like to see the bill go forward to the Finance Committee for that debate. Representative Greenberg.
Just a question. Do you think it would be wise for us to pass a companion measure, a resolution, urging the military to reexamine its position on salmon now, because that was an isolated incident of botulism? This is a bigger problem than just this. And I would suggest that if that is a problem, that maybe the chair would like to propose a resolution or an introduction by the committee, a House joint resolution, urging the federal government to reconsider its policy.
There are several actual resolutions being prepared right now on that, and dealing with the federal government, not only with the military, but other institutions, is one of those that will be coming down the pipe. Because it's my bill, don't prepare you say anything.
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chairman?
Representative Moyer.
I move that we move the bill out of committee with individual recommendations.
Any objections? Could we include my amendment? Is there any objection to my amendment of stipulating no more than $1.75 million go to any individual processor? Okay, the amendment will be adopted then. And any objection to moving the bill? It's coming. All right. One, two, three. Two of them gone. The next committee meeting of the House State Affairs will be Wednesday, the 13th. We'll have a briefing first thing in the morning on by the permanent fund people. Then we'll take further consideration on House Bill. Their business. We're adjourned.